Okay, could you state your name and say if you're willing to have this used in a film?
Yes, my name is Liz Harrow, and I am perfectly willing to let you use to film me and to use this in a documentary, or I think in any format.
Okay, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Well, it is March 13, 2009, and mm-hmm. we are collecting our final interviews for the Lansing 150 Project, asking people about their experiences in Old Town or mm-hmm. Lansing, Michigan. Could you say how you came to be involved in Old Town? What was your introduction?
My experience first, I was an architect. I was a young architect. Actually, not even yet an architect. Here, take this thing. That'll give you that. I was a young architect. I think I might have been between my master's and my bachelor's, and I was teaching yoga in Lansing, and a fellow who took some classes with me said that there was a fellow who needed an architect, and it was Robert Busby. He had, I have one more involvement with it earlier than that I just remembered, but this is the one where I felt like I got personally engaged with Old Town. And Robert had owned a building. It's the one that's now what we think of as the Creole. And it had a fire. And the building was insured for $65,000, and the repairs were going to cost $120,000. Remember, this is 25 years ago, something like that. Maybe, 20-something years ago. And so he was trying to do the repairs as inexpensively as he could. And and he knew what he wanted to do, and it was just a question of making it legal. So I did up some drawings. I did drawings for him and consulted with a mechanical engineer who was willing to do the heating and cooling part of it. And mechanical engineer had the right to seal the drawings. I didn't. And Robert gave me I was a member of a parents group that wanted art, music, and phys ed for the elementary schools. And in payment, he gave me a $75 contribution, which was like the biggest contribution we'd gotten for the whole year, you know. Anyway, so we did the drawings for Creole, and that's why there are those big bathrooms back there. And there were other plans. It was always in flex about what the building next door, where Portable Feast is now, and what was going to be the store, the third store down, the bookstore, for a while. What is it now? I'm trying to remember even what. The bike store. It's now a bike store. It had been a few things, but the idea was that all of these three spaces would communicate. And that's a big deal, because when you open up, when you make openings on property lines, there's all kinds of issues. And then we renovated these apartments upstairs and so forth. So I think that was my first real involvement. A few years before, when I'd really been a student, I'd been between my first and second year of bachelor's degree, I worked for the Community Design Center, which is a nonprofit design group with a lot of Vista volunteers and so forth. And there, I had been part of a group that measured some buildings in Old Town and so forth. And they were responsible for that first, the first version of Turner Park, which is right there at the corner of Turner, the Turner Mini Park, at the corner of Turner and Grand River. They had painted this was in the days of super graphics, when we thought that the coolest thing to do was to decorate with big numbers or big, stripes of color and so forth. And I think we were really cheap, but anyway, they decorated those two walls to look like old houses, and then they had built some small porches that projected from these paintings of houses out so that you could sit on them. And that was it. And I remember thinking that was just the cleverest thing that anybody could have done, admiring those people who'd done that enormously. And then, of course, 5 years later, they were, the militants of Old Town, the activists of Old Town, wanted to tear all that down because it had turned into a place where, homeless guys hung out, and it was not a place where other people were happy, where people were afraid to sit there. So that was my first involvement.
So you spoke about a faction or the militants of Old Town. What sort of factions do you think played a role in
saving? Well, and the most divisive stuff is stuff that I've heard about more than I've actually experienced. But in the very old days, this is like back in the days of Mayor Graves and so forth, when Old Town began to try to develop itself as a commercial center, as the original commercial center of Lansing and so forth, and they began to imagine that they would be a place where there'd be bars and restaurants, and we'd have these workshops where we would talk about, we'd have different people come in and talk about what they wanted and so forth. There were a lot of visioning processes that tried to be very, very inclusive, but over and over again, there were a lot of people who wanted something like an urban center, and there were a lot of people who lived around the edges who weren't really sure that that's what they wanted. They wouldn't mind if it went back to the way it had been in 1930 with a grocery store and an ice cream store and a general store. They wanted it to be a kind of neighborhood service area, you know, a place, their local stores, but they weren't really interested in it being a capital area draw. They didn't want people to come in from other places for music and jazz and dancing and drinking and so forth. And they were also a little bit jealous. I don't want to malign anybody, but I think they were a little jealous about the attention that was being given to this commercial area, and worried that money that was given to this district was money that was not given to Northtown, to the houses that were all around that needed plenty of attention and money as well. So there was another division, which was there were people who wanted jazzy, bright, fun colors and wanted it to be an artist district, and there were people who wanted historic preservation. And those divisions, there was a woman who's now dead, who was a very strong, and all I remember now is that her first name was Thelma, but I'm sure that there's monuments all over Old Town to her, who was a very strong advocate of the preservationist issue, you know. And there at Turner Park, in fact, Turner Mini Park, you can see the signs of that battle over and over again, that there have been, there was a sort of a thing made for feeding horses. I don't know what it was. It looked sort of like a planter, but it was, I mean, like a bird feeder or something like that, that was there for a while and then removed. And there were brick patterns that were in the, that were placed in the pavement there. That was to be more historic. At one point, there was a kind of bollard that was there. And then at other points, there have been these colorful, these pink and blue and yellow bollards that are, that had light in them, but they were supposed to look kind of historic, but they were in pink and blue. And then those three colorful shapes at the back that are triangle, circle, and rectangle, those were chosen by a young woman whose real job, her day job, was designing playgrounds. And she didn't do it all on her own. She didn't do it because she was crazy. She did it because the committees had told them that they wanted to have a background for hanging art up on, and so she was trying to find something playful. But there was always this tension between the people who came to the meetings and the people who didn't, the people who wanted to stay sort of the same or to go back to being a pretty version of what it was in the 30s, and then other people who wanted it to be a little bit more complicated or more modern than that. And it often came down to a line between residents and inside, you know, and incomers, you know, people who are coming back.
Yeah, I wanted to actually ask you a question about that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, can you explain why the Creole Gallery looks like it does? Because I suppose there were some people who might argue that this building should go back to the plaster interiors of the
to go
back
to some sort of right.
Historic.
Well, and one thing, yeah.
Don't look at me as you give
okay.
The answer.
Right. Now, one thing is that at that time, or at this time still, in historic preservation, it's very cool to expose brick, especially back in the 80s, let's say. It was terrifically, we thought that was the coolest thing in the world, is to go back to take off the old plaster and to expose brick. And that's what you saw a lot in a lot of historic preservation, no, in renovations, in these kinds of adaptive renovations inside, is that you'd peel off the old plaster and show the brick. It's only now that people are starting to go back to plaster finishes on buildings and so forth. But in the Creole, part of it was that Robert didn't have enough money to replace the floors, to replace the finishes, and so forth. So he decided to make a virtue out of the unfinished surfaces, and he just varnished those walls. And I think he actually put a little bit of some kind of wash on some of those to glaze them, to make them look more antique. The same thing with the floor. I think now the floors actually are new, but for years they were a patchwork of old wood, plywood. They were kind of mishmash, and it was the same thing. He decided he wouldn't apologize for that roughness. He would make it into a, you know, a signpost. So that's the main reason that brick was exposed where it was already exposed. In other places, the plaster was just left as is.
So as an architect and urban planner, are you pretty happy with the way Old Town has developed for the present?
I am pretty happy with the way Old Town has developed. It's been it's been pretty preservationist in that they've done a pretty good job of respecting the proportions and the sizes of storefronts and so forth. For years, I'm on the design committee with a lot of other members, and for a while we would interview people who were contemplating renovations, and we'd give them advice. We called it the roadshow, the design roadshow, and we would give them advice on ways to make their building a little bit efficient and a little bit more in keeping. Because I think a lot of times people just go to the window store, and they think they're doing the right thing. They're buying residential size windows or something. So I feel that most of the renovations have been pretty much in sympathy with what's already there, even when they've used modern materials and so forth. I would like more infill, and I'd like a little bit more jazzy, you know, breakaways out of that. Now that we've got the nice, solid, historic base, I would like it if the new buildings that came in were a little bit freaky, and in fact, one building, the building where the one where Sherrill's was, I guess that's where the bike store is. So, right? Okay. I'm really getting confused, but anyway, that is a one-story building, and it was going, and then Robert added a second floor there, and in admiration of a building that he'd seen over on Grand River, he wanted to do that in glass and metal, the second floor, because it was a new addition. It had never been there before. He was going to do it in glass and metal, and it was going to be a big break, and we had worked on a little balcony. It was going to be so cool. It was going to be so great. And I think it turned out to be expensive, and he just did another brick block with three windows in it. It's a little disappointing. And I think in almost all the cases where people haven't lived up to to their architectural intentions, it's just been a lack of money. So I can't forgive them. I mean, I can't blame them. It's the way Old Town is. Old Town has never been rich, and if it got too beautiful, I think I'd mind that more than having it be imperfectly prosaic. You know.
You think this whole redevelopment project has had some disadvantages or downside for any of the local?
Oh yeah,
community?
I saw this downturn. I was just there the other day, and Bella Blue is empty. That store, right on Turner, is empty. Another store around the corner has gone away, and I know that. One of the active developers in our in Old Town, John Sears, has lost a couple of tenants in Old Town and also on other properties, and that means that he's using whatever funds he has just to hold steady. He can't do more development at the time, you know. So, yeah, no, it does really worry me. I think that people take fewer chances in this kind of environment, and you have to take a few chances with Old Town.
Just going back to the old tensions between some of the old community folks who mm-hmm. wanted it to be like mm-hmm. it was in the 30s and
right.
more artsy people. I mean, do you think did the preservationists or the renovators totally win that one out, or was it sort of a mixed?
I think it's been a mix. I think that. I think it's a kind of conservatism that's made the preservation win. But at a couple of points, there were people who wanted to declare the whole area as a historic district. There were people who wanted to certify all the buildings as historic monuments. And if we had done something like that, it would have meant that every time you changed a window, you had to go through a certification process. So those more extreme measures never held forth. I'll tell you another example is up on. I don't know what this is an example of, but I'll tell you the story, is that the townhouses that have happened just to the north on Turner Street that were done by Joel Ferguson, right? It doesn't matter. When the first bunch of those townhouses were developed, we got copies of the drawings. Barry Wood had done the drawings, and Barry Wood's an architect whom I admire enormously, but who's more talented. His talents lie more with modern buildings. He's done some of the best modern buildings in our town. And for him, historic usually just meant colonial. I mean, that was all he knew, was just like Williamsburg, you know. I mean, there was just one style, right? And so his first set of drawings looked like they belonged in the suburbs of Williamsburg. And a fellow who was on our committee in those days, Bob Morris, began to draw over the drawings and to make recommendations for how they should be changed. And I said, you know, I know Barry, and I don't think he'll like it if you tell him, you know, if you tell him how to design it. I think what you should do is just make a list of what issues you have. And so Bob said, Bob basically, he wanted it to be Italianate. He wanted the buildings to look like the style of Old Town, which is Italianate. And make it a little bit more vertical, make the roof a little bit more vertical, and if there was trim, to make that trim be the kind of bracketed trim that the rest of Old Town has. And Barry did it. It's still obviously not an old building, and I don't think it's trying too hard. But I think that was a place where activists sort of worked with modernists, you know, and made it come out better. I think it fits in better, definitely fits in better than if it had been the Georgetown special that Barry had done the first time around. And I thought that was a pretty good interaction. I want to tell you one more thing. Years later, I was I'm going to guess this was in 94, but I don't know when it was. I was a president of the local architects chapter. And that was a time when still all the architects that I knew, really, most of our buildings were being done at the edges of town. You know, we're being done at Jolly Road and Okemos, you know, the intersection there. We're being done in these townships around, and we were doing these one-story office buildings with a simple gable and, you know, just the bad stuff that we have all around town now, everywhere. and most of the architects were really thought that we young architects who believed in city stuff were naive, that we were foolish, and that we were, and that the time we had an architectural critic come from Detroit to give a talk, John Gallagher, you know, used to be the critic for the Free Press, and he said cities are over, they're done. The only thing that cities will be good for is entertainment. They'll be the entertainment districts of. You know, for the suburbs, you know, and that's nothing else. No business, no anything will ever happen. Will be happening in cities anymore. It's a really depressing assessment. It was very discouraging. So we had a charrette, a design charrette, and all of these old time architects showed up. I had like half of the members of the architectural membership here in the city of Lansing came to this workshop and gave up a whole day of work, and I was. For me, that was amazing because these are guys that you can't get to do. It's hard to get them to do a golf outing, you know. But I mean, I think that they really, as much as they were building these suburban things, they really wanted to believe in a city. And I think they really loved the idea of everybody getting together. They spent the day in meetings and sketching and so forth, talking about what, you know, how Old Town should be and what, you know, and what the city should be like. It was, for me, it was very, very exciting. I'm not sure any of those plans really happened, but that was part of what was nice about Old Town, and it still is nice about Old Town, is that they've always opened it up to the public. They've always had these discussions, and so far, again, because no developers have taken and run with this project, they've actually been pretty responsive to public input, and things have gone forward, pulled back a little, gone forward more or less with the consent of the people.
Is there another area of Lansing that
I think Old Town really is special. I think because of its compactness and because, you know, it has that kind of urban scale, you know, it could be better. It'd be nice if there was another street. If, like, after you'd walk down Grand River, you could actually loop back and walk down another street instead of, and so we've talked a lot about developing the alley. I would really like to develop the alley behind, like, the Mustang and so forth, just so you'd have another set of views, just another, and but the only other place would be the east side neighborhood. The east side commercial neighborhood is pretty, you know, there's something there, but it has the same problem. It's just one street. In fact, that's a problem with Lansing in general, is that all of our streets really developed, you know, as corridors. You know, like, I don't think downtown has never had that kind of intimacy. I don't know why. It's, I know they have a PSD. They have, you know, an organization of shop owners and so forth that tax themselves to develop. But I don't, it's not like Old Town. Old Town, everybody seems to know each other. They're all stopping into each other's stores to spot each other, you know, when somebody has to go away for something. They, it's just, it, they're all eating at the same restaurants. It just feels just much, much friendlier. And I think people who end up setting up a business there love it. I don't know if we have any other, we may have had it 20 years ago and then we lost it. Again, Rio Town was trying to do that. Rio Town's another one that's just one, you know, one street that's lined. There's nothing around the corner. There's, you know, the closest thing we have is here, is Lansing. You know, I mean, is Old Town.
What's your favorite particular spot in Old Town?
Mm, that's a tough one. My favorite particular spot in Old Town. I think it's probably, let's see. I guess my favorite spot is probably over behind the fish ladder. You know, I think that probably is the nicest spot for me, is at the water and around there. My least favorite spot right now is the ice cream store, and I'm hoping that gets fixed up, because I feel like that's just aching with potential. That ice cream store and the parking lot around it, the building, you know, Capital City Blueprint wants to fix itself up, and the building on the other side is almost ready to be fixed up. And so then that whole corner could be, it could be a destination. You could ride your bike for 6 miles, take, you know, go past the fish ladder, come down the sidewalk, end up in the ice cream park. You know, it could be great, but it's not there yet.
What are your favorite experiences or particular experiences to in Old Town that stick in your mind as particularly good, memorable?
I really like, there's a few. One is I really love the festivals. The music festivals are pretty great. And what's also pretty great about the music festivals is that you can't go when you're there. Lansing is a small town. You go and you see 12 other people that you really, you know, you see 12 people before you get to the end of the street that you know, and everybody's there. And it's really become our, it's what John Gallagher said, it's our entertainment district. But it's not just for entertainment. It's really for, I don't know, for coming together. It's our living room. It's really nice. There are other times when I've been just on a cleanup, you know, on a spring planting in May, and we're digging. And again, 5 people that I know, you know, come by, and it's for me, it's amazing because I don't know how many people, you know, do their shopping there. But it turns out that there's a fair number of people on a Saturday morning. And again, you're crossing these people. But the other one was that when Robert was killed, we had a vigil outside his store, and outside the Creole, and it felt as if that just happened almost spontaneously. And it was, I'd always done vigils for a protest. There was nothing to protest here, but everybody just felt so much the need to do something, and we couldn't. We just needed to do something, and it was amazing to me how many people felt this need. And there were, I don't know, 200 people outside his outside the Creole in the night, holding candles, singing songs. It was really kind of silly, but it was just so moving that everybody had this closeness to each other and to Robert and to the town. I mean, really, Robert symbolized for a lot of us, you know, what Old Town was about, you know.
What songs did you sing?
Well, I remember one was Give Peace a Chance, which, you know, again, it was all, I don't know why it was so, you know, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have scheduled it. I wouldn't have told other people to do it. And I was so grateful to these other people who did, you know, who did call for it. Then again, like a few days later, we had a memorial service, and there were musicians. It was more formal. It was in Dart Auditorium. There were musicians. There were poems. There were. It was a lot of readings and so forth. And I found that one actually very, very uplifting. There were so many people in Dart Auditorium. There wasn't room for everybody. They had to have a TV, you know, a feed outside. But for me, that vigil of just all these people who just felt, you know, who felt connected to Robert, but I think also connected to Old Town and to the community, and felt and knew that this was the way, you know, this was like sitting Shiva. This was like, you know, staying up the night of the death, you know, that you just have to. And everybody felt that way, that they had to all come together the way a family would just sort of automatically come in without thinking too hard about what had called them there.
Yeah. Was this East Lansing, this Old Town community, really centered in Old Town in terms of where people lived, or was it a community that drew people in from East Lansing and Okemos, and so sort of a virtual community, or did you feel like there was a real Old Town presence?
That's a really good question. I would say most of the people in Old Town, most of the Old Town community, I think, works there or lives there. I would say 85%, 90% of the people who feel connected to Old Town are those people. And then I'm one of those people who's always been coming in from outside. But there's a lot of people who live somewhere else but work in Old Town or vice versa. But and that night, I would say, that night it might have been a little bit less. There might have been more people from the community, because anybody who'd been to the Creole, you know, and the Creole really was our entertainment, you know, our entertainment venue, or one of the most important entertainment venues for the area, you know, felt that they had to come in.
Has Old Town bounced back since Busby's? Do you feel like it's continued on?
Yeah, I think it has, and in fact, I think Perspective Two is trying hard to be that new venue, and I think it will. It will continue. Creole's coming back. I think it'll continue. And in fact, it's always done this. Old Town, the other thing that's good about Old Town is that it's a kind of incubator for small businesses. And so there's always a lot of businesses that come up. That's why I can't remember what was in the bike store before, because it's been 3 or 4 or 5 different businesses over the years, and you end up remembering it from the time that it was the bookstore, then you can't quite remember if that was the same, if it used to be next to Shirl's, or if Shirl's replaced the bookstore. So I think a lot of businesses rise and fall, and still I think Old Town will go. Robert was really important, but I think he left it in a strong position. So.
Do you have a story about him?
Story about Robert. That's a really good question. Let me see. I'll work on that. It just seems like I was telling somebody a story the other day. He's very gentle. He's very, very nice. And there's one story I can't tell. I'll think of another one. Yeah.
Let me ask you, is there, while you're thinking of that, and we'll come back to that, but is there a kind of a racial or ethnic dynamic in Old Town? I mean, do you have a sense that it's a multiracial community? Is it primarily... What sort of ethnic influences do you think have shaped it?
Well, I don't think it's very... I think it's mostly been white, except for Robert. I could be wrong. Shirl, no, that's not true. That's not true, excuse me. Because there have been a lot of businesses there that have catered, that have sold clothing to... There have been two different stores that sold clothes for African-American children on one side and for women on the other. But I still feel like the community that I'm talking about has been mostly white and middle class. I'm looking around, and I'm not seeing that ethnicity that I would like to. There's Pablo's around the corner now, and Hispanics in the neighborhood. But I still feels like that it was a more or less yuppie. For me, I experience it as a more or less yuppie kind of. Movement. I could be wrong about that perspective. I'd love to hear from other people. I'd love to be corrected on that, but that's what I see. Fair enough. There's a lot of women, a lot of gay women, a lot of gay men. But I not a lot of women. It's true. Yeah, but I haven't seen a lot of. But I don't. Besides Robert, and again, Robert rented to the two black women who ran clothing stores. I don't remember any other people of color in the in the beginning days, certainly in the beginning days of Old Town.
It used to be a pretty rough neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen any signs of that?
You still do see that. In the old days, like the Mustang and the and then where Vernadine's is, Buck and Mary's Cafe, were places that were just, you know, I mean, people would tell you stories. And you couldn't tell if they were telling you stories about something that happened yesterday or like 30 years before. But it turns out those reputations don't go away. I mean, about murders that had happened there and fights. That's the one where people get killed when they have a fight and so forth, you know. And those reputations, I mean, they just stayed on and on forever. It's actually an argument that I've had in the Old Town Design Committee, because we get memos periodically if there's a, there are prostitutes sometimes who work out of one of the, some of the flop houses over there, over on the extension of Grand River. Or if there are guys who are working scams, they come over and they say, I need a dollar to get, you know, to buy gas, or I need a little something or other, or they come around from door to door with some kind of story or other to get up money. There's often an email sent out about those people to keep on the lookout, and you're supposed to, I think, call the police, or you're supposed to do something to kind of scoot them along. And my argument has always been, well, where are they going to, I mean, they've got to live somewhere. And this is an issue of gentrification, is that you, as you clean up, the criminals go away too, or the low-level scam artists go away. I don't know. It's just a problem, and we can't clean it up too well, it seems to me, or it shouldn't be our import. But in the very beginning, when we used to, years ago, I was there for a meeting or something like that, and my car had been broken into, and my calculators were stolen, unbeknownst to me, because I hadn't paid any attention, and my papers were strewn all over, were left to be strewn by the wind. And I got a phone call a day or so later from a woman who'd found some of the papers with my names on them, and I went out and I collected them behind the building and discovered like a couple of little nests almost for guys who were sleeping there in sleeping bags and so forth in the porches behind the buildings. And ever since then, I've always locked my door. I don't usually lock my door, and I always lock my doors in Old Town, because there were these homeless guys who would, you know, I'd never been robbed anywhere else in Lansing, and I'd been robbed, I had my car opened up. I think most of that has gone away, but then that's my question: where'd they go? Yeah.
How about that Busby story?
Oh yeah, no, I can't think. I don't know. I don't know if I have a Busby story. I'll just tell you that there's a guy in Old Town that Busby broke off with, that he would not talk to anymore. And I was doing business with this guy, and I called him up and said, "Is it okay? Is it okay that should I trust him? Is it okay?" And so forth. And Busby said, "See, I can't tell the story, but anyway, you know." But Busby said, "You know, don't worry about it. You know, he wouldn't say anything against the person. He just said, I have an issue with him. You should proceed. You know, he's perfectly fine." And he wouldn't let this other person into his building. He wouldn't talk to him. He'd really like cut him off. But he didn't spread any rumors about him. He didn't do anything about it. It was only that I was one time at this meeting where he says, "Oh, I'm not talking to him." You know, that kind of thing. It was that I figured it out. But so, no, I can't think of any story. Yeah.
Well, my last question is a little bit unrelated to this, but Lansing is organizing this time capsule,
mm-hmm.
part of the 150th, where they're getting ideas from the schools and sort of collecting objects. And I'm just curious what you think, based on your experience with Old Town and North Lansing. I mean, what would be a fitting object that
right.
would help, you know, sort of memorialize Old Town or Lansing?
Hmm.
What would you choose? What do you think would be a good choice?
Boy, that's a good one, isn't it? Well, yeah, I think you even told me about this question ahead of time. That's a really good question. I don't know. We want a 150th anniversary, huh? I wonder if, like, John Sears has And again, see, I'm not that into historic preservation, but when I think about Old Town, I really do think about its great architecture. So I think I'd be interested in like an old bracket from one of these buildings or something like that. Or if we had some bricks that were taken off of a building that still had the, that still had the old billboards on them. You know, some of these, I don't know if you've seen like in, is it Such Videos store where you can see the old advertising sign on the conference room wall still or something like that. I guess I would like something from its old days, you know, like a wood bracket from one of the old buildings that's been torn down. And again, if I said that, then I'd also want like a saxophone with it or something. You know, I want to get at that new thing too, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the old is part of the new, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the preservation. So
right.
Sort of,
right.
You know, record the fact that history is being recorded.
Right.
Right now.
Right. And I'll tell you one more thing that you may not have noticed. I don't know if you've noticed the great signs in Old Town. They're really nice signs in front of all the buildings. And sometimes, like the one in front of Hayes, in front of Summer's store, which is Grace, right. In front of Grace, she has a picture of a woman she has a cutout of a woman in an evening gown, and it stands up in front of her store, and there's a lot of others. And that, almost all of those signs have been done by a volunteer, by a fellow who donates his time. He's a retired fellow who's created these signs. Like this, the sign that's in front of Mama Bear's is, it's on posts, you know, it's on like old wood sticks, you know, and then it's got a kind of an agglomeration of wood. And he's designed these really special signs for every store. So that would be, and some of them are made of styrofoam. That might be the nice thing to go in with a bracket, is some clever piece of styrofoam that went with a bracket. So
do you know any Lansing ghost stories?
No. Do you know some?
No.
Because that's a good thing, is that actually, there, you know, that Chicago has like ghost story tours and stuff. But that'd be a good thing, yeah.
Stories, mm-hmm. There don't seem to be that many.
Yeah, that's really, yeah, I wonder if we do have any. Yeah, let's see, that's a ghost stories. I'm trying to think of old time. See, you need older timers than me. Like, periodically, we've been in Old Town. Like, Robert said that one time. You know, the reason it's called Creole Gallery is because he discovered that it was the Creole cigar factory, and he found an old, in a wall or something like that, he found an old cigar box or something like that. But periodically, you'd be doing something on a building, and somebody would come up and start telling you stories about going to movies in that section of town. Or, I remember when the store was here, and then this was over here, and so forth. You need to find, those are the old timers, you know, the real, not the people who started in 1983, you know, or something. But
right, well, one of the students was going to interview the owner of the Unicorn.
Oh, yeah.
He was, I think, 85.
Five, right, yeah.
Really, he's full of stories.
Yeah, oh, that's a good thing, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good idea. And he may know some other people. I even wonder who owns the Esquire. You know, because they've been around forever, you know.
So, what's the future of Lansing? What do we do now?
Boy, yeah, I keep on wishing that we would, you know, that we could tear down the edges, you know, that we could, like, just tear down all the stuff that we built and move back in. But I've done enough workshops with people, Michiganders, and to know that even though they think all that stuff is really cute, they really do prefer living in a big house with a big yard and with their kids on a, you know, on a wide street with sidewalks. So I don't know. I don't think we're going to get urban anytime soon. I don't, you know, and it's just, we're just fighting upstream to wish that we were. The best we could do is get some kind of electric vehicle that connects us cleanly to a downtown, sustainably to a downtown. Because I don't think Michigan's ready for urban. I might be a pessimist.
Could Lansing become a cool city in any way?
Well, if cities in Minnesota can become cool cities, I think we could. I think that if cool is having having nice people, having friends, having a market, and having a green pathway, we can become a cool city. If it means having a lot of art, music, movies per square foot, per capita, we can't be cool. But if you can be cool in some kind of rustic REI Campfitters way, we can do it.
That's a good ending. There's a way. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now I want to think of more people ascending. So the one person was Barb Morrison. I don't know if you talked to her. She's Terry Terry's ex-wife.
Oh. Well,
and she lives in Seattle or somewhere. You'd only be able to interview her. But she was really one of the... And I looked on the website the other night. And we wanted to see, because I know I have seen articles about Barb and Terry and Robert. They were like the founders of Old Town together. Yeah, yeah, it did cause attention. And I again, nobody, I'm not enough of an insider on that stuff to know, you know, to know the inside, you know, to know the stuff in the back there. But the last time I saw Barb was at Robert's, you know, at Robert's memorial. Right?